Lots of really good feedback thus far on this new Ghost Bites YouTube and podcast initiative, so thank you. Please do keep it coming. Let's start with RemGrow, and they have finalized their MediClinic restructure. Now, this is quite important because RemGrow is essentially swapping their exposure here. They had bought MediClinic out with Mediterranean Shipping Company. Essentially, some very wealthy people came together and decided that it was time to own a hospital group. And this included the Southern African business and then the offshore operations as well. What they've decided to do now is just simplify things a little bit because RemGrow would rather be more invested in the Southern African assets, and then Mediterranean Shipping Company wanted to get their hands on the European assets. So they basically sat down and did what looks like the easiest negotiation ever, where they just put the exact same baseline value on each of Southern Africa and Europe, and that is $950 million. Now, in these kinds of transactions, there are always subsequent adjustments to the price based on how the balance sheet moves, working capital. In simple terms, that just means things like debtors, creditors, even the inventory sitting in the hospitals would probably have been an adjustment here, the latest values of debt, etc. And because of these adjustments, RemGrow has actually received a dividend of $130 million in addition to the fact that they've now gotten their hands on the Southern African assets and given up the exposure to the European ones. So pretty interesting transaction. I think that generally speaking, the market was pretty happy with it. I did run a poll in GhostBytes that dealt with this, and 80% of respondents said that they would be quite happy for RemGrow to focus on local assets that offer growth as opposed to the European safety net. But 20% there did like the European safety net. So something to be said for that as well. Then let's move on to South32. The mining giant is getting out of the aluminium sector, or aluminium, depending where you are in the world. And they've decided to do this so that they can just unlock some capital to actually reallocate it to other areas in their group. So they were very busy earlier in the week on SENS. And one of the things that they announced was that at the Sierra Gorda asset, they will be investing in the fourth grinding line project. What that means simply, I can't actually tell you because I'm not a mining engineer, but I can tell you that by 2030, they expect copper equivalent production to be up by around 30% versus current levels. So that's a language we can all understand. They also expect a 10% reduction in average operating unit costs. So that's also very important. Now, how do they get there? Well, the joint venture there is going to invest $275 million over the next few years. They reckon the internal rate of return is above 20%, subject to copper prices, obviously. That would be in dollars, so that would be a really fantastic return on capital, assuming they get it right. So not a big surprise then that they are quite happy to let go of some other assets to free up capital to invest in things like this. And what they are selling is, as I mentioned, their aluminium assets. This pretty much is all of them, really, excluding Mozal Aluminium, which is currently in care and maintenance because they couldn't actually find a power supply in Mozambique at a suitable cost. Never a dull moment, unfortunately, when it comes to mining in these places, or for that matter, any kind of energy-heavy business. The buyer for these assets is Alcoa Corporation, US listed, nice deep pockets there. So they will pay $3.1 billion upfront in cash. They will issue $1 billion in shares to South32. They'll take on $750 million in debt and lease liabilities. And then finally, there's a contingent cash consideration of up to $750 million based on aluminium and alumina prices until 2030. Now, put all of this together, and what it really means is that they are locking in almost the entire price up front. $750 million is spread out, and it implies a through-the-cycle EBITDA multiple of 6.8 times, an annual average free cash flow multiple of 12.7. I think those are pretty decent exit values. You'll often see these sort of assets trading at quite low valuation multiples, depending on where we are in the cycle and how people are feeling about it. So I think that's a decent price. The market certainly liked it as well. The share price was up more than 11% on the day of the transaction. And I think a lot of that is also just because of how much this simplifies the South32 group. It means that 85% of their EBITDA after this transaction will be coming from base and precious metals. So that is copper, zinc, silver, and lead. So well played here by South32. And it does mean that Matt Daly, who now comes in as the new CEO, taking over from Graham Kerr, is going to inherit a more focused group than before, and one that has already done some heavy lifting in terms of deal making. So his role now will be to focus on their core assets, invest that capital, and certainly deliver on exciting projects like what they are doing at Sierra Gorda. We then move on to Hudeco, and this was on a subsequent day of news because I'm covering a couple of days at the same time here, so it's not such a busy period in the market. So what is happening at Hudeco? Well, for the 6 months to May, they unfortunately had a tough time in a couple of their business units, that's for sure. Continuing operations actually look good. Turnover up 9.5%, operating profit 11.2%. This immediately tells you that margins expanded. As soon as you see profit growth at a higher percentage than revenue growth, you know margins went up. And interim dividend 10% higher. So they are in the double digits there, albeit only just. They managed to generate operating free cash flow of 478 million rand. That's before taxes and finance expenses. They're sitting with net borrowings of around 654 million rand. So the balance sheet is in pretty decent shape. They generate a good amount of cash relative to the amount of debt they have. And they also have what's known as headroom in their existing facilities, which means they have the ability to borrow more if they need to. But actually what they're planning to do is reduce their debt over the remainder of this year, subject of course to doing more acquisitions. If you look segmentally, you'll find that consumer-related products were 45% of group operating profit. In that business, sales were up 2.7% from the continuing operations and operating profit up 8.8%, so nice positive margin move there. Engineering consumables, that's the other segment, 55% of group operating profit from continuing operations again. Acquisitions were a big source of growth here because the like-for-like business actually didn't do super well. So like-for-like, their turnover was up 2.4%, operating profit only up 2.1%. So acquisitions played a huge role in getting turnover up 15.3% and operating profit up 19.3%. Obviously, the market would rather see organic growth than just acquisitions, and so this side of the business was a little bit of a drag on performance, but it certainly pales in comparison to the alternative energy business, which unfortunately was just a casualty of load shedding, and their battery bay management and battery service business, which was affected by the market entry of a competitor. If you would like to learn more about those stories, then go back and check out episode 1 of this Ghost Bites podcast and YouTube playlist, where I dealt with those issues in more detail for Hudeco. Then we look at Optasia, which has been under plenty of pressure recently because their airtime credit offering was essentially just switched off in Nigeria, and nobody really seemed to notice, which is not exactly evidence of a strong moat. But then we saw some insider buying from the CEO, as well as the founding director, who had previously sold a big chunk of shares to FirstRand this year. And to add to that bullishness, because those are obviously bullish signals, we now have an interim trading update that tells a much glossier story around the company than the share price would suggest. So investors now need to weigh this up, and it's not an easy one. There are some really big risks here. There are things to be worried about. But also, in the 6 months to June, they generated some pretty solid growth. Revenue up between 50 and 60%. Adjusted EBITDA growth between 40% and 50%. So some margin pressure there, and more margin pressure as you work your way down, as net income was up between 30% and 40%. So great growth rates here, but you do have to wonder if switching off the airtime credit business has affected some of these margins. I'm not sure. I want to wait for detailed results to know for sure. In this period, they generated 72% of their revenue from microfinancing solutions, but that's not really the sustainable mix because the airtime business was so negatively affected. So we'll have to wait and see what happens in periods to come when they get back to a sustainable mix and what that means for margins. But don't underestimate the risk in this business. That would be my one comment here. Their recent geographical expansion includes South Sudan, of all places, which is basically a humanitarian catastrophe of a country. So just be careful here. They do operate in some very risky markets. Nigeria is actually the least of their worries, although that's what hurt the recent performance in terms of regulatory changes in Nigeria and what that meant for their airtime credit business. Still, for the year ending December 2026, they reckon that normalized net income will grow by between 25% and 35%, which is pretty solid. And again, here, this is where I ran a poll in Ghostmail. 38% of respondents said, I'm bullish, this price will recover. 27% said, it's a risky business, this is just a blip. And 36% said, well, I'm on the fence on this one. So very, very interesting there. And finally, Supermarket Income REIT, which has refinanced £445 million in debt. Now, this may not sound like it's super relevant to you. For one, this is a UK-listed REIT. Obviously, it's listed on the JSE as well. Otherwise, I wouldn't be covering it. But it's not something that you'll find too widely held among South Africans Also, refinancing debt is very much an ordinary course of business activity for a property fund because they always have debt, right? They use their properties as the ideal asset class to act as security for the debt, makes it easily available, makes it a nice cost-effective source of finance, which really helps. So what they've done is they've refinanced, as I said, £445 million. What does that do for them? Well, it deals with four different debt facilities that were due to mature in the next 2 years. So instead of waiting until the last minute, companies will sometimes refinance ahead of time just to give themselves room to negotiate versus being at the door of the banks basically with a begging bowl saying, hey, this thing is going to expire soon. I really need help. Obviously, from a negotiating perspective, you don't want to put yourself in such a position of weakness. Now, another major strategic element of these refinancing transactions is the composition of the banking syndicate. Creating some competitive tension among the banks is one of the obvious benefits of achieving scale. And in addition to the four banks in the existing facilities, they've now introduced another two banking relationships. So that's a total of six banks involved in this syndicate. And that shows you how these large borrowers actually get a bunch of banks involved. From a banking perspective, it does help. Actually, they spread their risk. And from a borrower perspective, as I said, a bit of competitive tension, it tends to keep the cost of debt down. After this transaction, the company will have no debt maturing until 2028. The weighted average cost of debt is 4.4% after this, and 98% of it is fixed or hedged. If you compare that to the replaced facilities, then these new facilities deliver an annual interest cost saving of around £0.3 million or £300,000. So it does help. The cost of borrowing has gone down, which is ideal. And it's just a really good look at how corporate debt actually works in practice. So kudos to them. Very nice. That's it for this edition of the Ghost Bites podcast and YouTube series. As always, please do give me your feedback, especially in the comments. Please subscribe to the channel. Please share it with people who you think will be interested. I'm obviously keen to really get my YouTube off the ground now. So any help from longtime listeners and fans will be most appreciated. Have a good one.